Some people pay other people to turn a wrench, swap their oil filter. Me, DIY, all day. This isn't convenience, it's confidence. Purelator 20K oil filters. Clean oil, more miles. Over 99% filter to perfection. Only at Walmart.com or select Walmart stores. Purelator, keep it purring.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Struggling with weight that doesn't respond to traditional dieting? ProLon's 5-Day Fasting Mimicking Diet is a clinically developed nutrition program designed to promote fat loss while protecting lean body mass. Developed at USC's Longevity Institute, it assists the body in entering a fasting-like state that helps reset metabolism, target visceral fat, and supports healthy metabolic markers. In just 5 days, ProLon offers a structured, science-backed approach to weight loss without extreme restriction or guesswork. Get 15% off plus a $40 bonus gift when you subscribe at prolonlife.com/begin. Struggling with weight that doesn't respond to traditional dieting? ProLon's 5-Day Fasting Mimicking Diet is a clinically developed nutrition program designed to promote fat loss while protecting lean body mass. Developed at USC's Longevity Institute, it assists the body in entering a fasting-like state that helps reset metabolism, target visceral fat, and supports healthy metabolic markers. In just 5 days, ProLon offers a structured, science-backed approach to weight loss without extreme restriction or guesswork. Get 15% off plus a $40 bonus gift when you subscribe at prolonlife.com/begin.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
On November 2nd of 2016, 34-year-old Sherry Papini vanished while jogging near her Redding, California home. 22 days later, she reappeared 150 miles away, emaciated, bruised, and branded. Yes, branded with a branding iron. It actually used to be a wood cutting or wood burning tool, but it worked. Claiming that she'd been kidnapped and tortured by two masked Hispanic women who planned to sell her into sex trafficking. It was all an elaborate hoax, though. For 6 years, Papini maintained her story while law enforcement wasted countless resources searching for these fictional kidnappers. The truth? She had been voluntarily staying with her ex-boyfriend, whom she'd contacted, claiming her husband was abusing her. She purposefully lost weight, cut off her own hair, and created her own injuries, allegedly. Arrested in 2022, Papini was sentenced to 18 months in prison and ordered to pay over $300,000 in restitution. But even now, she is changing her story again, claiming that in 2025, in this new documentary, that she really was kidnapped just by her ex-boyfriend instead of the two Hispanic women. This is a story of a woman whose lies created a media frenzy, destroyed her own family, and consumed investigators for over half a decade. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, joining us to discuss this case. We're going to watch a clip of Sherry here in a moment, just as she introduces the case, introduces why she's doing this documentary. It's called Sherry Papini, Caught in a Lie. It's on Investigation Discovery or HBO right now. You just got done watching it. Just overall, 10,000 foot overview. What was your reactions?
I thought it was well done. Mm-hmm. I think they tried to come at it from various angles. And it's given us a lot to talk about with psychology and the mind and self-serving behavior and different types of personality disorders. There's a lot there.
There is a lot here. And pieces of this thing, you almost kind of go, oh, well, maybe she is telling the truth. But how do you really even know? Let's begin. We're going to take a look at just kind of how this whole documentary starts. This is from, like I said, Sherry Papini, Caught in a Lie. Watch the whole thing on ID and HBO. This is her setting up the scene for the doc.
Oh. Oh, my God. The story that the world thinks they know is that I am a master manipulator who's fooled everyone. That's my magic wand. Sorry. I'm going to do ridiculous things because some of this is ridiculous. The Sherry Papini that's out there, it's not me. She's not real. It's just this version of me that has been created to fit the narrative for the media's version of what happened. I've gone from teenage sex worker to criminal mastermind to master manipulator. I poisoned my children. Liar, cheater, criminal, whore. There's this version of the story of, oh, you're only talking now because you got caught. And also, thank God, it's about time. I'm so f***ing tired of keeping the secret and living the lie. Now I get to tell the truth. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Yeah, that's how it all begins. There's a lot to unpack there, just in her erratic personality, her statements that she's making, the media's version of the story, contrary to her telling a lie for 6 years. What'd you get there as you opened up the book on Sherry Papini and the stock?
She sure got a dramatic flair, doesn't she?
She's a little. Yeah. She knows how to work a camera now, doesn't she?
She does. She does. And it reminded me of one of the documentaries recently with Karen Reed, where it's like, now I'm taking control here. Mm-hmm. This is going to be my truth, my way.
Yeah, it's what happens when you do a personality about someone with a likely cluster B personality disorder. It's like, this is what you get. And they all follow the same pattern. I've been saying that for a long time, and everyone who does it knows it. It's like, yes, they're following the same playbook. You will see elements of Karen Reed in this, in terms of just personality, framing the stories to fit a specific narrative. Let's play some more. We got a lot to go through here. This is just a short clip where she kind of sets it up, trying to basically bring people in with her because she lied about all of this, of being kidnapped, of being branded, of being abused, of all these horrible, horrible things, blaming these two Hispanic women that did not exist, and then lying to her husband for 6 years while she's with the kids that this all happened and she's this victim of this horrible kidnapping, but tries to pull it all down into a nice little basket and say, well, have you ever lied? Like it's anywhere near the same. Let's take a look at this.
Haven't you ever lied? Have you ever lied in your history of existence? And then has that lie been blown up and broadcasted around the world? It's so much more complex than just pointing the finger and saying, you're a liar. And I wish more than anything I could have been more truthful.
It's one of my favorite things with folks like this, the narcissistic borderline types, where they like to add a little crackle to their voice with no tears and be very dramatic about anything that happens around them. Because maybe someone will believe. Because people do. People do. People are dumb.
Yeah. Those big eyes.
With big eyes, people are very susceptible to having pity for people that seem that they deserve pity. And there are plenty of people that do deserve pity, who've gone through a lot of stuff, and they deserve some attention and help. This is not one of them. What was your take on what is she doing there? What is she in? Is it from a psychological standpoint? What is she trying to set up?
I think her narrative, again, that she is a victim, and hasn't everybody lied at some point? It's very manipulative, and you get that from the get-go here, and it continues throughout the entire show.
Yeah, it very much does. Well, an interesting thing to me about this story is after she had come back home, She's with her husband again for about 6 years, and they think, or he thinks life is good, but he's catching her in lies and such. And eventually, it starts to go a little haywire, and he kicks her out. She ends up going and living with his sister. So her, for her, what would have been her sister-in-law while she was married to him. I found that dynamic rather bizarre. Let's take a look at this and kind of understand what is going on here, why this happened. Because I think there's some interesting things here with the sister too. Like why are you taking this person in? I mean, this is your brother who supposedly had all these things happen. Anyway, let's watch and we can talk on the other side here.
It's so painful to watch that, how humiliating it is, and it being made such a spectacle. Keith wasn't around. I was surprised at that and also sad. I was sad for both of them. I was sad that Keith felt that he didn't maybe want to be there. And the way that he was protecting himself was to just be separate and push her away. After I was released from jail, my stuff was put in trash bags. So basically, he said, I don't want to look at her. I don't want to talk to her. I'm not going to answer the phone. And then I don't know exactly how it got figured out. I just know that there was conversation about where she might live. I just volunteered to have her live with me. It's like she can come, she can be with me. I knew that it was possible that she could be lying, but it still was like really terrible things happened to her. I don't need to believe anyone to believe in them. This is a woman who needed help and she needed love and she needed an atmosphere where she could feel safe and where she could be protected and where she could be listened to. So it turned out that she moved in with me.
Okay. Ooh, I feel like these are big ones. I feel like these are necessary big ones.
Yeah, they're big ones. Okay. I loved it. I got to have an experience with someone who felt like a sibling in a way that I hadn't had before. I'm not close with my brother. I don't know Keith very well as an adult. We don't have a lot of connection. We haven't had a lot of connection, regardless of what has gone on with he and Sherry. Keith and I just haven't been close for a very long time. With Sherry, we just were able to share in ways that I didn't have before, and it was really exciting to have her around.
She took me in. And during that time, I shared custody with the kids, and they were so happy.
It's a bizarre dynamic that is certainly mm-hmm. going on here. I mean, on the surface to me, it's like, okay, these are two people who have some serious needs that need to be filled mm-hmm. and they're filling them for each other,
yes.
but they're both very selfish needs, it seems.
Yes.
Give me
yes.
your thoughts from a psychological
yeah,
standpoint.
Yeah, there's definitely a mutual click between the two of them where, you know, the sister says, you know, she may not be telling the truth, but that doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And what kind of neediness does she have that Sherry can just kind of pop into her home like that? And now they're sisters mm-hmm. and now they've got this great relationship. And it also speaks to ongoing problems in Keith's family, you know, that this would be the way that this would fall out. Mm-hmm. It's unusual.
Yeah. I found all of it just very strange. And we'll continue to see this turn up as we continue to work through the clips here. But there is an ongoing seeming shock that Sherry has that her husband, after finding out she's been lying about the whole thing for 6 years to his face, his reaction was, you're not going to be near the children and your stuff is in trash bags. Have fun. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm. That's not a horrible reaction to have. That's called protecting your kids. That's called protecting yourself. That's not a screw you, Sherry. And then, oh, right. How could you do that to this woman? No, this mm-hmm. woman was doing horrible things to her family mm-hmm. mentally for all mm-hmm. those years. The best thing you can do is get away from mm-hmm. her and keep your children at bay because you don't know what this person is capable of.
Right. It's out of the norm of how you would deal with, what would you call it, the shared joint custody. Mm-hmm. Let's make our family work even though mom and dad aren't living together anymore. This is out of that norm. This is in the bizarre category.
I'm surprised.
And strange.
She, yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm surprised she even gets what she gets, or that she got what she got for seeing the children,
right.
Period.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's definitely out of the norm. And what was his sister thinking, jumping right in the middle of that and saying, I'm going to solve this? It's almost like she had this rescuer thing going.
And I wonder, I mean, I don't think she's like a bad person. I'm not trying to criticize her. She really spoke, I think, with some vigor there about she was a woman who needed some love. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is a true statement, but she needed it. I don't know that she's capable of receiving it because clearly that's been an issue for her most of her life. Mm-hmm. But if you're on the outside and you're kind of that empathetic person, you can easily get sucked into that. And I'm wondering if she got sucked into that pretty easily there. Mm-hmm. Let's keep watching. This is Sherry talking about realizing, okay, the government's after me now. And it's time to finally tell the truth, at least the current version of the truth at that moment in time. Let's take a look.
This was Sherry Papini versus the federal government. I was terrified. I was terrified because it was the first time that I was going to dip my toe in the potential of actually telling the truth. I had told law enforcement that I was abducted by two Hispanic women, which wasn't true. I was abducted by my ex-boyfriend, who held me captive for 22 days. There was no consent. And he still did it. The injuries that occurred, the bites on my inner and outer thigh, the footprint on my back, the brand, the melting of my skin. I can't do that to myself. And I am telling you, there was no consent. I lied about James's identity for several reasons. First and foremost, I was in danger. I was scared of James. And keeping his identity concealed was keeping me safe. He had mentioned that he was going to be watching the coverage over and over and over again. So he was watching, waiting to see if I would come out and tell on him. Now, on top of that, I couldn't tell my husband that I was having an affair. I know in pictures it looks beautiful and it looks perfect and it gives that image that we were an amazing couple, but we had problems, both of us. You know, both of us were really immature and we both participated in some pretty toxic behaviors. I never physically cheated on my husband. It was engaging in conversation with someone that turned into more emotional intimacy. And that's what I was getting from James. James and I had dated back in 2003, long before I married Keith, the later half of my teenage years. James and I met and we became friends. And he was just kind of quiet and silly. And from what he was telling me, he lived with his grandma because both of his parents were in and out of jail or prison, or his home life was not good.
Yeah. So that's kind of the genesis of James and how they came to be together. What are you getting when you're watching her? When you're watching her deliver these messages and deliver her story on camera?
She is a very good actress. I mean, and I'm not saying that none of this is true. I'm sure this is based in reality for her. But she's very genuine in how she presents herself. And when we see footage of her, when we know she was lying, she's very genuine when she does that. Mm-hmm. And she wants to craft a narrative now that changes everything from what she had said originally. And I have always thought it was odd that this James character was not looked at more closely and that no criminal charges were brought against him. That never did make sense to me.
I do find it odd. I do believe they did investigate him a bit, though, but I don't think they found anything to be credible. So I mean, it's quite a leap here that she's going out on television and saying, these are harsh accusations against James, that he did all of these things to her. I don't know what's going to happen of that, if it's going to get litigious and he's going to go after her, for making these claims. He'd have to, of course, prove that they're not true. And she would have to prove that they are true. And I don't know that either of them have the ability to do that. She has been seeing a psychiatrist, a psychologist, for quite some time. He diagnosed her with something that's not even recognized in the DSM, self-defeating personality disorder.
It's not in there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that are in there that I think she probably checks the boxes for. Obviously, we can't diagnose her here on this program. But obviously, if you look at traits, there's a lot of cluster B, narcissistic things going on, histrionic, borderline, all of that fun stuff. So what is self-defeating personality disorder? Why would someone say that when it's not even a true diagnosis? And
I had to look it up because it goes back to 1987 when it was originally put in the appendix of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual as something that they thought could be looked at further to see, is this really a thing? So it was a proposed personality disorder. It never made it into the book. It's certainly not in the book now. But it describes individuals who consistently engage in behavior that leads to failure, mistreatment, or disappointment, even when better options are available. So just in a very general kind of way, I think we can say a lot of people are self-defeating. Yeah. Is she self-defeating? Certainly, but she's a lot more than just that. And her psychologist in the show, I believe, said that he also saw and had been treating her for histrionic traits. Well, histrionic personality disorder is in the book. And I think we can all say that, that's a lot closer of a fit, or more specific in her case. That's the attention seeking, the constant need to be the center of attention, may use drama, emotional displays, or provocative behavior to remain in the spotlight, exaggerated emotions, displays of emotions that may be very big, but they're not very deep. So their emotions tend to shift rapidly and lack depth. Now, this is a big one, inappropriate seductiveness or flirtatiousness, uses physical appearance or sexually suggestive behavior to gain attention, even in non-romantic settings. And I think when you look at her history, before the incident where she was, where she disappeared, whether you want to call it an abduction or the disappearance, she had been engaging in text affairs with apparently multiple men for ages, which is why they came up with, Keith came up with this kind of weird postnuptial agreement that if she had a relationship with someone else, that she would immediately be cut out of, you know, cut out of the property in the marriage. Just a lot of strange things. But I think there's this constant flavor of attention seeking from men and using sexuality for that. That seems to be the core issue for her.
What surprises me is when her husband at the time brought that up and said, look, I'm giving you a second, third, whatever number chance it was at that point. But if you cross this line, like, here, there are consequences to your actions. She seems baffled that there's going to be consequences to those actions. So when she crosses that line, she's very offended. And, oh, she feels like she's repressed because he put these parameters out on our relationship. Number one, you probably shouldn't still be in the relationship if, if you have to put these parameters out. But they did. But the fact that she's shocked by that someone would put those parameters out, or even like describe it as being abusive, it's like, what do you expect? I mean, when someone's been abused and cheated on left time and time again by you, Sherry, and they're finally putting their foot down and saying, here's my boundary. And it's very clear. If you do this again, anything here, you're not just going to like walk away and take half of everything and go be along your way because you're going to do whatever you want to do. No, here are rules. If you violate them, this is what will happen. I mean, she could have gotten out of that relationship. They could have gotten a divorce then and said, okay, let's split things up fairly, but let's just do what normal healthy couples do. Let's not cheat on each other. And if you do, you're not going to get anything.
Yeah. I think it's fair.
If I had been his therapist at that point, I would have said, you don't need to be in a relationship with a woman that you feel you have to do this sort of thing with, because that's not the foundation for a good relationship.
No, if you're ever going to be in a relationship and you have to have that sort of a stipulation that you're bringing up in after you've already gotten married, it's like, this might be not good.
Not help. Good.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a look at some of this. Her basically kind of trying to normalize the cheating and find some ways of kind of justifying it in her own mind. Let's take a look at how she attempts to do that.
I want to have a partner that's engaged in the participation of something with me. And I was so desperate for that. And I didn't know how to find that in my marriage. I didn't know how to get that.
Early on in my marriage, Keith caught me text messaging and talking to another person. He made me sign a postnuptial agreement that said if we got divorced, he got everything. That's the black and white terms of the postnuptial agreement. And Keith had said, if you cheat on me, if you step out in any way, if you do something that displeases me, I will get everything. I'll leave you with nothing and you will be worthless. His exact words were that I was going to end up living under a bridge. And then we had kids and I was working for AT&T still and our marriage was good enough. And then in 2016, I was laid off. And the dynamic of our marriage shifted. He had the job, so he was allowed to go and do whatever he wanted to do. I was the one that stayed home with the kids. And then it became, Keith is now in charge of my life, and he's in charge of my social circle. And then, slowly but surely, my social circle kept dwindling. At that time, Keith had instated a new rule that I wasn't allowed to talk to him at night. Like, I literally was a ghost. Or I would try to talk to him and he would turn the TV up. James and I had reconnected a few months before I left my job because there was a death in his family. And it was just talking through phone and text messages. Mostly text messages. My emotional affairs were just about having someone that I could relate to, that I could talk to. It was not sexual. James was someone that was actually listening to me and hearing me. And that's what I needed. I'm managing a situation where I'm secretly talking to James and I'm still in my marriage. Here's how we keep it a secret. By having a secondary phone that Keith is not going to check so that I could continue engaging with James. The FBI's stance is that I was planning a secret hoax kidnapping, which couldn't be further from the truth. The truth is that I was concealing an affair from my husband. My husband, who is threatening to take everything from me if he found out that I was having any involvement.
Yeah. There was a lot in there. She needed this thing in her relationship. She needed that love. She needed that attention and I get it. People do need that in their relationship. But there was a laundry list of things that she put out there that she's claiming that Keith wasn't giving to her. And it seems to contradict a lot of reality of what he's said in previous interviews. He doesn't have the pattern of lying about everything to preserve himself. She does. So there's a little thing called projection that feels like that might have been going on in that clip there, where she's, you know, referring to a lot of things, you know, her thoughts, feelings, behaviors, and maybe saying that he was doing those things when I'm going to guess it was probably a bit more her. I don't know. What are your thoughts on all that?
Well, the first thing that jumped out at me, this whole problem with her having, you know, affairs over text with other men and this postnuptial agreement happened before they had kids. Mm-hmm. Before. It's pretty easy to undo a marriage before you have kids. And they still chose to come up with this rather unusual situation where she was basically in the marriage because she was threatened with she would lose her economic status if she got out of it. But she doesn't take responsibility for anything.
No.
It's Keith is doing all this to her somehow. And I think if I were working with her in therapy, I would certainly come back to the place of agency.
Yeah.
That she has had a lot of power over her choices here, rather than always giving that power away to someone else who's controlling her, manipulating her, doing things to her.
But is that even reality? Are other people sitting there manipulating her, controlling her, and doing things to her? Or is it her doing that to other people? Because the track record sure seems to be the latter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the weird part about all of this. I want to jump over to another piece here. It goes a little out of the timeline of the doc, but it's an example of how she's able to somehow kind of twist reality around. And even when she's caught in the lie, and she's caught in a lie in this documentary, just how she handles it. And it's very bizarre. It's very telling. We'll watch and we'll talk about it on the other side.
Three prisons. I've been through three prisons. I'm not in any prison anymore. I'm ready to tell the truth about James, and I'm ready to tell the truth about Keith. Because I'm free.
Are you, though?
I had been carrying on this emotional affair with James via text, and he was starting to get deeper feelings for me, and that wasn't the purpose for me. And then it got to that point where it's like, I'm ready to really just end things with him. And James started threatening me. I'm just going to come up there. I know exactly where Keith works. I know where you live. I'm going to blow shit up. So what the hell do I do? And that's when the plan came for him to come up to Reading to see me. So it was supposed to be the goodbye. We had communicated that morning, and James had been so pushy that morning. And then I was at that point where I just had said, I'm going to go for a run. And I will let you know when we're going to meet up and where we're going. So I had started my run. And when I had gotten to the end, where the pavement ends, where the dirt road is, I saw a vehicle pull up and then back up. That's when I realized that it was James. And my cell phone fell. And when I reached down to get my phone, that is the last thing that I remember.
But there's this.
After your release, you told Keith you pulled your hair out and placed your phone and earbuds on the ground on purpose to leave a clue that you've been
abducted. So the documentarian there, because it's hard to hear, is saying you had previously stated that you had pulled your hair out and put it with the phone on purpose to make it look like there was some sort of violent attack. That's essentially what they're saying, mm-hmm. because she just told a totally different story mm-hmm. right there. So she's getting caught in that lie right now. Here's how she reacts.
She said, I knew you'd find my phone. I knew you'd find my phone in my hair. I knew you'd find it. I knew you would. That's why I pulled it out. So which one is it? Did you drop your phone by accident? Or did you place it there on purpose?
Oh, during captivity, James said they found my phone. So I knew. I knew he had found the phone.
Because it wasn't even the question.
So there was an elaboration around it, sure. And there was, what's the word that you've used before that I can't think of? Thank you. Thank you. There was embellishment around it, sure. But it was my first attempt to say, guy was in trouble.
Okay, so at all, you were lying about purposely placing it there. You told us... You were telling the truth.
Yeah. no memory of getting in the back of this vehicle. I have no memory of what was said or what was exchanged or how he managed to knock me out or get me in the back. I have tried EMDR. I have tried hypnosis. I have tried therapy, but there is absolutely no memory of getting into the car. It's just not there.
So she skirts around the whole damn question of why was you, because she said, I ripped out some of my hair, put it on the phone to make it look like there was a struggle, essentially. And they keep calling her out on it. Yes, they found my phone. Okay, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, why did you do this? And then she just, it doesn't even like register. It's like she just goes on to something else.
She just keeps talking and veers and maneuvers. And you see how easy it is for her to come up with a different narrative, a different story, and just, you know, just be oblivious to the fact that she's contradicting herself.
She immediately
doesn't sit with it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, how does that come about? I mean, how does that come about? Is that like a learned behavior where so much of your life you get people that are just saying yes to you? Mm-hmm. I mean, she's an attractive woman. I can imagine there's a lot of guys who she could say the craziest shit to. And so they'd be like, okay, yeah, sure, whatever. Okay, yeah. And eventually it's just, well, that's how it works. I can say anything I want. Anybody will just smile and be okay with me because I'm pretty. I don't know. I mean, is it from that sort of a life or is it, I mean, what's going on there?
Whatever her personality traits that we're seeing at this point that have gotten her in so much trouble, this has been her style, you know, probably from the time she was a little girl. Tell a lie, bat your eyes, and people will just let you maneuver that way. Mm-hmm. And she's really good at it. It just comes naturally to her. So when would we ever believe anything she says?
Yeah.
When would a person believe it? It's something that, you know, if there was, you know, the truth serum that you could give someone, I mean, it would be shocking what the real story of this woman's life really is.
Get her really drunk and see what she says.
I doubt even then. I doubt even then. You would just get version A, B, C, D, E, F, G. You'd just get one of the stories.
Spin the wheel. What do we land on right now? Yeah. I found it fascinating. Where she goes, after she's having this emotional affair with her ex-boyfriend, I mean, she doesn't seem to think that she's operating 1,000% on her emotions. She doesn't seem to have any regard for anybody else's emotions. Saying that the deeper feelings, that's not what was the purpose of it for me when he started having deeper feelings. This is all according to her. And this was supposed to be the goodbye. Now, in no way, shape, or form am I saying, okay, if a girl leads you on, it's okay to go kidnap her. No, not at all. That's no way near of what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if she doesn't seem to realize that if you're having these communications, and there's other parts of this doc where it turns out she told him to come up, they were going to go get together. There's text messages where she's saying that she wants to go live with him. So it's not just, hey, come up, let's talk for a few minutes and then be on our way. She's setting up a whole other story and a whole other life plan for somebody who's coming to get her. And then if she's being honest here and she doesn't want to go, then she says she was kidnapped. This guy doesn't have any sort of history of kidnapping people. There's no pattern of behavior here. I find it very hard to believe that just one day this girl that he supposedly cares about and wants to protect would suddenly show up and just take her away and chain her up in a closet the way that she's explaining it. But again, it shows a deeper disconnect from anyone other than Sherry. Mm-hmm. That's been just kind of the ongoing theme in this. The way that she frames things in her mind, that's one weird way. Here's another weird way she frames the fact that she's not allowed to have contact with her children physically anymore after doing all of this.
My children were not taken away from me. They were stolen by my ex-husband. I have never been ruled as a threat or a danger to my children. My children were never taken by the court. They were taken by Keith. Before I went to prison, Keith filed an order to get 100% physical and legal custody, and it was granted because I was going into prison.
Yeah, tell me more about that.
I have phone calls every Sunday. Generally, they're at a certain time, but he has a tendency to cancel them at the last minute or shift around the schedule. It's been that way for almost 2 years now.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say she's projecting about canceling last minute or shifting around the schedule. That she's the one doing it. I'm gonna go out on a limb and guess that there. He was being responsible. He was taking custody of the children because she clearly has demonstrated she's not mentally fit to be a full-time parent or even part-time parent to these kids. When I had to go through a similar thing several years ago, I didn't have a Sherry Papini in my life, but I had something kind of like it, where it got to be really like, okay, you're not well, like not well enough to be around the kids. Every single person had told me, you have to look out for what's best for the kids. Do not let emotions get involved of, well, maybe it would be best if they had, if there was more interactions there and all of that. I had to do what was best for them. I did allow contact for a while. And eventually through all of the, not showing up, canceling last minute, that wasn't me. That was the other side. And so I can see what's going on here, where there's the erratic behavior of, I'm going to change this because of how I'm feeling at that moment in time. He did what was right. And she's trying to frame it as if this is something horrible. She is the one who ran away from her family and still somehow thinks she's going to be entitled to have the same rights that she had previously. Is she just clueless in all this because it's just not going to go her way? Does she legitimately believe that she should have these things? Or is it just a, I'm going to stomp my feet and make myself look more like a victim publicly versus I actually want to have my children in my life?
I'm sure she misses her children. I think, you know, she has tremendous personality problems. There's so much wrong with her. But undoubtedly, she did care about those kids. I mean, I don't doubt that. But this is where you can see how her personality problems impact her ability to be present for the kids, that 22-day disappearance. You know, the lying that got her incarcerated. If you're a stable person, you love your kids, you don't do any of those things that are going to jeopardize your relationship with your children. So again, I don't hear her taking responsibility for it. It's all evil Keith is the one who took them away. Not that, you know what, I proved that I was not competent to be a parent.
And that's the thing. That's why it seems like, oh, maybe a light bulb moment happened here. And she went, oh, well, if I paint Keith as the really bad guy, right, I will look like I was just fighting to see my kids again. Because that's essentially what she's claiming in this whole documentary, is that she survived the 22 days so she could be with her kids again. And now Keith's not letting her be by the kids. And she went through this horrible, horrible thing. And her stories don't add up whatsoever. And yeah, it's these people are spooky.
They're very spooky. And, you know, I would love to have a conversation with James if I could, you know, because there are so many unknown things about that guy, and he wouldn't appear in the documentary, understandably, probably in his own best interest not to appear in the documentary. But what was really this dynamic between the two of them? Who tells you that I want you to brand me, and you just go, okay, sure, that's a good idea. What do you want me to write? You know?
Keith Raniere is one of them. But
yeah, there's another. Yeah. But it's just everybody involved, there's a lot wrong. And it's just...
Yeah, I mean, that is a whole other thing, too. I mean, I'm not saying that this James guy is a saint. I think there's something seriously wrong with him.
Something wrong with James.
Yeah, if you're that driven to appease this partner of yours at this point in time by literally branding, Exodus something on her back?
Something Exodus, yeah.
And like,
which nobody can explain.
No, it doesn't make any sense at all. And then, I mean, in the other doc, I believe James did speak in the other doc, The Perfect Wife, and there was claims in there where he had like a hockey pole, I believe, or a hockey stick, and he claimed that she asked him to just hold it out so she could run into it before she got out, before she came back.
so it looked like she had been bruised and beat up, and he claimed he never did anything to her. But who does that? Who's like, yeah, Sherry, just that? Keep running sure. into the hockey stick yeah. for whatever. No. Let me brand you.
No, that doesn't add. His bit in it is dirty. It doesn't add yeah. up. It's you know, there's no normal justification for his role in this. So, as I say, I've always felt like, you know, he needs to have some accountability for whatever the heck went on here, too.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree so. I don't know that he physically, like, took his hand or took anything to physically abuse her. I do kind of buy that this may be how it happened, that she wanted to look abused and he was supposed to help her. But you don't help that. You don't say, no. yes, let me help you.
Absolutely yeah. not. No, yeah.
It's
you
a
do
very
not.
Weird way of looking at, yeah. at all of this. Yeah. Let's take another look here, because the weird part about this is she claims that she was abused for these 22 days, held captive in this room, but then she goes on to protect this guy for 6 years, like he's a mob boss or something, and he's just this dude living in down this other area with his grandma. I mean, why? Let's take a look at this is how Sherry explains it in the doc.
I remember towards the end, there was this dinner that James had let me off the chain and we had dinner. And I said, my husband's going to find me. He's never going to stop looking for you. The media was blowing up everywhere. He knew, and I had continued to tell him, this needs to end. You need to let me go. And he was like, well, there's too much has happened. So it all came down to me. It all came down to my cover-up, and that's what I agreed to. I agreed to with James to make up that someone else did it, that I wasn't going to come after him, that I was going to make up these two people that were the actual captors. It wasn't the right choice. And I know that, and I wish I just would have made a sketch of James. I wish I would have told them from the day I was in the hospital that it was James. And it wasn't right. I'm not justifying what I did. I did the best that I could do in that situation, and it felt awful. It still feels awful. I wasn't thinking about my neighbor that was searching for me. I wasn't thinking about the churches that were lighting candlelight vigils. I was thinking about myself. And I'm so sorry that I wasn't able to be more truthful and have more courage to not lie. But there was no master plan. There was no hoax kidnapping. There was a cover-up of what happened. And I participated in the cover-up. I just wanted to go home.
So there's that. I wasn't able to be more truthful. I question that. No, you were. You can't just say that and then we brush it off to the side of you weren't able to. You were. You were very able to. And you participated in the cover-up. That was another interesting note. And I participated in the cover-up.
Yeah. And you see how little agency she perceives herself as having, that these things just happened to her and she has to lie. It's like she doesn't see that, no, she has a pattern of choosing to lie. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, the big line that I would take with her is that you have choices every time you open your mouth. There is a choice you are making. You've always had choices. And what is going on that lead you in your own thinking to justify making these bad choices over and over and over again, rather than always looking at somebody else did this and that, and then I had no choice.
I mean, does she truly feel like she has no choice there, or is this just the excuse that she goes with? I mean, I think she knows she has agency. I mean, she knew she was able to get out of this house and go and run away for 20 some days.
She tells herself she doesn't have agency. And I think on some level, she believes she doesn't, even though she clearly does.
She's not just telling other people she doesn't have agency. I mean, because I can see where she knows she does, but she's going to say she doesn't to other people to make it look like, oh, you really are this victim. Do you think she really believes that she doesn't?
I think in her little girl way of being, because a lot of this is so childish.
Yeah.
These choices are ridiculous and she's going to get caught. There's not going to be a good outcome. So she's thinking like a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
And in her immature way of thinking, she doesn't see at that moment that she has a choice, even though she does. And then that's the story that she continues to spew. So this is a mind that has never grown up. Mm-hmm. She's still not thinking like an adult.
It's very stunted. We did learn that there was some sort of sexual abuse in her childhood, not perpetrated by her parents. Her parents are in the dock. They don't say who did it. And obviously that can cause a lot of trauma and can stunt you quite a bit too, depending if you don't get treatment for it. And it sounds like that there really wasn't a whole lot. The way that the parents worded it is we didn't really know what to do back then at that point in time. You know, one can argue that, but it was a different place in time. It certainly is not the world that we live in today, where that's much more understood and there's a lot more options available. One of the big lies that she told was that she made this sketch with the police artist, and it's of a Hispanic woman because James's mother is Hispanic. This is what she tells investigators. And this is her reasoning for making the woman, one of the women on the sketch, Hispanic, or they both were, because that would maybe be a breadcrumb, and then they'd go and find that woman who's the mom of James, who looks kind of like the woman in the sketch, who really wouldn't be looked at for anything criminally, but somehow they're going to connect those dots. Well, here was a lie that she got caught in the documentary about that very sketch.
What is most valuable to you? Is it not lying to a federal agent, or is it laying next to your children? I had impossible odds and impossible choices. And it's incredibly easy for someone, even you sitting on that side of the camera, of saying, well, but you lied, without having been in the situation that I was, in the marriage that I was, or in the danger that I was. And how truthful are you? I mean, I really challenge anybody watching this film. How truthful are you? How truthful are you? Have you ever lied? I've watched you do it. I've watched everybody on this crew do it. You know?
Fair. So I know you told us that you described one of the Hispanic women to look like James's mother. Well, we hired a private investigator to look into James, and the first thing we learned is that James's mother isn't actually Hispanic. She's Irish.
Okay. I've met her twice. It had very little to do with his mother and her ethnicity. It was about trying to get them to alert them to his identity without saying his name out loud. Quite frankly, I don't give a fuck whether she's Hispanic or not. It was about James. It wasn't about her.
She reminds me of a teenage girl when they get caught in a lie.
Yes.
Fine about that. Whatever.
Yes.
You know, I'm just going to dress it up. It's not a big deal. Why do you care?
Yeah.
Because it's what you claimed. That's why it matters. Because it's what you said. That's why it matters. I mean, and again, there was a lot of like, well, do you ever lie? I mean, very much pulling everybody in. Let me pull you all down to my level, and then I'll feel better about myself. But more focusing on the lying about the mom and the reaction that you got there. What were we watching? What was happening there?
Yeah, this is not an adult. She does not process information like an adult. She doesn't see herself as having agency. She projects, she manipulates, and I don't think you can believe anything that she says, unfortunately. I mean, it's sad to see someone like this.
You know, her therapist, it was on here, and he was talking about doing EMDR and all sorts of stuff. He believed that it, you know, she obviously said nothing helps, but he said he believed some things were helping. you see a person like Sherry, and obviously you can't diagnose her, but I mean, is this someone, you know, is there any help for someone like this, or is this just so ingrained that this is how she's going to live out the rest of her life, and let's hope to God she doesn't ruin any more? And that's
this is a lady, she's how old now? 40? 40-some?
I think 42, I believe.
42, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah. She still seems to be about 14, 15 years old.
Yeah.
Mentally, and this may be about the place that she stays at. Yeah. And, you know, kudos to that gentleman working with her so diligently. I felt like he very much cares about her and has tried to do good work with her. And, you know, the interesting thing about therapy, people lie to their therapists all the time, and therapists are not lie detectors. Therapists tend to have, you know, the old term, unconditional positive regard for our clients. We want to think the best of them. We want to hold hope for them. And I'm sure if she were my client, I would have that attitude too, of holding hope for her and wanting the best for her. But trying to stand back objectively and look at this and say, is she ever going to be very different than the Sherry that you see now? We hope so, but likely not.
We hope so, but if you were the, if you had a son that was, hey, I met this wonderful lady named Sherry Papini, and you knew all this about her, would you be like, yeah, give it a shot? Yeah. She seems lovely.
Yeah, probably not.
Here's how she ended it, and it's an interesting way of ending it, questioning, you know, how do you think people are going to think about me in this? Let's take a look.
My only hope for justice is that the person that held me captive and tortured me comes forward and admits to his crime. Yeah. I'd say it's unlikely. I mean, I've been through it all already. I was at rock bottom. We're bedrock. There's no more. What the f*** am I gonna do? I mean, really. Sorry. Do you think that this film is going to do more harm than good for me?
Yeah, there you go. That's Sherry Papini. Do you think this film is going to do more harm than good for me? Your reactions to that?
I thought it was a beautiful place to cut.
Yeah.
Oh, and I have to say, there's a part of me that has compassion for her. I mean, what a way to live. What a way to go through the world.
Yeah.
Feeling like you are constantly maneuvering, that there is no real truth, that everything shifts all the time, that you're cut off from your kids, you know, for good reason. But it's just sad. The whole thing is sad.
It is, because I don't know that her mind is ever fully wrapping around the valid reasons why these things have happened to her. She realizes that she causes things, but then doesn't understand there's going to be an effect for any of them.
Right.
And when there are true effects, because she's doing really extreme things, she doesn't like it. Well, yes, you're not going to when you do that sort of things to other human beings. One little thing I found interesting there was when she, and I've noticed this throughout the doc, when she talks about her new story, her new truth, if you will, she speaks about it, and she's not reading from paper, but she speaks like she's reading from paper. I notice that. I hope that he comes forward and admits to his crimes. It sounds like a third grader reading, where it's just very kind of, you know, segmented. The words are kind of off. There's not a lot of correct inflections on certain things. Mm-hmm. When she's telling one of her new facts, she speaks like that. When she goes off and starts riffing about her emotions, then she's very much more, oh my gosh, and this or that. But when she goes to the facts, it's like, it's almost like she wrote them down in a notebook somewhere and practiced them.
Probably did. Probably rehearsed it. Yeah.
Because that's what it feels like. It's weird. There you go. Sherry Papini. I have a feeling we're not going to see the last of her. I feel like there's more to come on this story, whether it be anything to do with James or wherever she gets next. And if you're someone who is on a dating site and you happen to be matched up with a lady named Sherry P.,
and you're like, let's see what I can find. And you found this video, run for your life.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Struggling with weight that doesn't respond to traditional dieting? ProLon's 5-Day Fasting Mimicking Diet is a clinically developed nutrition program designed to promote fat loss while protecting lean body mass. Developed at USC's Longevity Institute, it assists the body in entering a fasting-like state that helps reset metabolism, target visceral fat, and supports healthy metabolic markers. In just 5 days, ProLon offers a structured, science-backed approach to weight loss without extreme restriction or guesswork. Get 15% off plus a $40 bonus gift when you subscribe at prolonlife.com/begin. Struggling with weight that doesn't respond to traditional dieting? ProLon's 5-Day Fasting Mimicking Diet is a clinically developed nutrition program designed to promote fat loss while protecting lean body mass. Developed at USC's Longevity Institute, it assists the body in entering a fasting-like state that helps reset metabolism, target visceral fat, and supports healthy metabolic markers. In just 5 days, ProLon offers a structured, science-backed approach to weight loss without extreme restriction or guesswork. Get 15% off plus a $40 bonus gift when you subscribe at prolonlife.com/begin.
From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U.
Did you say someone got shot?
November 2006, a college football star on his way to NFL dreams, gunned down in broad daylight.
Just bawling, crying, and he said, Coach, they killed him.
No weapon, missing witnesses, conflicting accounts, and for years, no arrest.
She insinuated that the Miami PD had done nothing, and it became a little bit more accusatory.
The case goes cold, rumors spread, and the truth gets buried. Until now.
His world could come crashing down. According to him, it was over.
The ending, something no one saw coming, because this story isn't over yet. From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U. Binge the full season right now, wherever you get your podcasts.